I'm Casey, an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 7th, 2009. My home group is the Keystone Group up in Buford. We meet Wednesday and Friday night, if you're ever up that way. Thank you, Kat, for asking me. And thank you for holding this down. It's good to see y'all continuing to suit up and show up. I know that's how you stay here, but it's pretty awesome. I wasn't nervous until, I mean, the recording thing is fine, but I was like, two people for their first meeting ever is awesome. Welcome, Caroline, Jessica. Welcome. That's awesome. I had a pretty awkward childhood for an alcoholic. I was born to normal drinkers, and they drank heavy, but they could turn it off just like that, or they could not drink at all, which is something crazy to me. My first drunk was at a Allman Brothers concert in the 90s. It was one of the only times I've ever seen my dad just hammered. We had to leave early because he was so drunk. My dad was like a kind of like an accountant. So he had money, but he was stealing all these. Anytime the vendors would turn their back, he would like steal whatever, you know, just swipe it, just like it as the game. And he was just like, he was giving me drinks. I remember they started going into a song, One Way Out, and he starts throwing his elbows, and I'm drinking out of it. That's when they still served bottles in concerts, and I'm drinking, and he knocks my tooth out. When we got home, my mom put him to bed, and there was still a cooler in the car, and I held myself to it and continued drinking by myself and went and met my friends. It was July 4th. And we ran around shooting fireworks off. Cops came. I ran. So I didn't tell my friends that I was drinking. So my first drunk was, you know, caused physical harm. Ran from the cops. You know, didn't tell anybody what I was doing. And that was kind of the theme from there on out. And I had the best time of my life. I loved it. The first time that I ever admitted that I had a problem was 16. I just got my license and was driving around the neighborhood, tearing up people's yards. We had bought a funnel from Home Depot and made our own little funnel, and probably did like 20 Coors Light through that. And I remember the going down, you know, just tearing people's yards up, and we got stuck on some bushes of somebody's yard. And my buddy, who he'll come into the program a few years before me, he's on the tailgate bouncing to get us unstuck, and I'm flooring it in reverse. Could have easily killed him. We got home safe, and you know, the cops were in the neighborhood because of all the noise, and the fog light falls out of the SUV that we were in. And it's just the car alarm goes off. So it's just like, cops are in the neighborhood. Well, here we are. Bang, bang, bang. You know, cops come, and I'm out there with the remote trying to turn it off. And they spotlight me, and I run away, like I always do, and try to act like I'm asleep. And I didn't fool anybody. That's when I had to go to my first alcohol, drug, you know, counselor. And I took a test, and I scored really high on the test. And it's not a test you want to score high on. And I had no problem. I was like, okay, that makes sense. You know, whatever. But they didn't tell me anything to do with it, really. You know, I met with every Wednesday at a church with all the other delinquents from around Gwinnett County. We talked about doing drugs and drinking and we all lied and said we didn't do it anymore, really. And that was what I thought AA was for a long time. Because I was selling drugs and doing all that in the parking lot with the guys. And, you know, it's like some guy talks about doing this. I'm like, all right, I'm going to talk to him after the meeting, you know. That was a big part of my identity in high school, was the guy who wanted, you know, anytime anyone wanted to party, I'm down. You know, so college time comes, Georgia Southern is what I hear all the parties at, so I didn't apply anywhere else except for there. Went there, and you know, just content. Things just took off like crazy. I was, you know, blacking out every night. They called me St. Patrick in the dorms because I had, my hair was a little more red then, but, you know, I was just always insanely drunk, stumbling around. No one really knew my name because I could hardly speak. And that's how I got that name. You know, got my, next DUI that, my second year of college. I was going to, Quick Trip, get a hot dog. It was the most expensive hot dog ever. And when I went to jail that time, I felt like I was so much better than everybody there. It's like, I'm getting out of here, you know, y'all got problems, I don't, you know. I had to kind of tone back my drinking, and I got really, really depressed. And I remember just laying on my parents' couch, just no motivation to do anything, and miserable. And I started seeing a counselor, and, you know, he would always hint at my drinking and drugging, and I was just like, you know, this is depression. You know, didn't want to take any, you know, look at, because that was my solution, was, you know, if I'm drinking and drugging, I'm feeling good. Like, I'm, you know, it's working for me. Except for the consequences, at that time. It was getting bad, with the drinking once I got off that probation and everything for that, DUI. I just picked up right where I left off. And, I remember I was living with a bunch of my buddies in Decatur at the time, and I would have these big, moments where I'm like, I'm done, I quit, a big speech, and I would give away all my paraphernalia. I never actually gave away any alcohol or drugs, but I would give it all my stuff away, and then a week later, a few days later, I'm asking for all my stuff back, and I'm back at it, and I remember being so embarrassed, you know, because I was a good starter. I was a big, had that big speech of I'm never going to do it again, and, you know, it was just embarrassing. And these guys had known me, you know, for years and years, and I would have to drink in order to come out into the living room and talk to them. I had some other buddies from Georgia Southern that I was still keeping in contact with. One had almost died, and he went to rehab. And he was out of rehab for some reason. We were riding around in Decatur, and we were smoking. And somehow this guy that he went to rehab with kind of just showed up in the middle of the street. And we ended up in an AA meeting over at, like, Tower Liquor, on top of Tower Liquor. And I was so high and uncomfortable. And I didn't know what to do, just like, you know, it's like, say my name. You know, I stood up and started like talking about how my life was unraveling, and, you know, blah 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 blah, and stared at my shoes the rest of the meeting. And when it came time to pick up a chip, I didn't, because I knew I wasn't done. And I went out. I stayed out for, you know, years more. But he got me into my first meeting. The other guy, he went to, he took a different, instead of going to rehab, he went to the Marine Corps. And, I remember I was looking at the, I had the meeting schedule up. I knew I had a problem, you know, and there was always something, another reservation that I was going to wait for him to get back from Iraq. And then we went to Philadelphia to see the dead. And I was going to get sober when I got back. And once I start drinking, I can't stop. Once I start putting anything in my body, I'm just going to keep going and going. And I remember seeing people at another concert in Atlanta on that Thursday. the following Thursday, and they're like, "Casey, you look rough, man. You're not doing good." And I was like, "Man, it's been a crazy weekend, dude." And they're like, "Dude, it's Thursday. You know, you need help." You know, and I got ended up getting a DUI a few days later in Athens because another buddy was about to go to work release for the summer. And you got to see your boy out before he goes to work release for the summer. It's like, you know, it's like $5 liquor pitchers or something crazy like that. And I tried to drive and was on the wrong side of the road. So just completely could have easily killed somebody. And I went to Gwinnett Room that Saturday and picked up a white chip and was, you know, I felt at home. I knew I was in the right place, but I was hesitant on getting started. I didn't want to get a sponsor because I knew I had a probation officer coming down the line. You know, I knew I was about to be in trouble, so I didn't want anybody to tell me not to do what I wanted to do. So I went to meetings every day for, I think it was like 3 weeks, but I had a music festival ticket to a place in Florida, and I knew that they were going to tell me I probably shouldn't go. You know, so I didn't get a sponsor. Made it to Valdosta, got a case of beer, blacked out for 4 days, and came back with my tail between my legs that Sunday and picked up another white chip. Grabbed a guy after the beating and asked him to be my sponsor. And he's like, "I've only got, you know, I'm only on step five, six, you know. I can't sponsor you, but I'll talk to you." And he said, "Until you find another sponsor." And I just remember having a huge relief with finally moving in the right direction. During that trip to Florida, I was, you know, not only drinking everything under the sun, I was taking everything under the sun. And I remember coming back to my parents' place and just sighing. And then the plant next to me sighed too. And I was like, "Man, you're out of it. You're out of it." And I started my journey there and started calling him all the time. You know, we were going through the steps, going through the big book. And, you know, I had all the jail coming up. I had, you know, I was still in school at Georgia State, and I would have these panic attacks that I never had before because I would always be loaded and go into class. If I had a presentation, I'd take a couple shots and go in and do it. And I started having these, like, they were panic attacks. And I remember calling him and talking to him about it. I didn't believe in God at the time. And he told me to pray about it. And I prayed about it, and I sucked. I was sweaty, mess, but I got through it sober. You know, and once I had to go back to jail for a month for the charge, and my buddy that was bouncing on that tailgate came to visit me in Athens and told me it was a blessing that I was there, and he was glad that I was doing okay. It's like I didn't feel okay, and I definitely didn't feel like it was a blessing that I was in jail. So there's a few explicit words, you know, shot back at him. But that time I really, you know, was, you know, there was stuff going around in the jail, and I had to pray all the time to not pick up. And I remember seeing this guy that had, he didn't speak any English at all, and he was fasting when he was in there. And I thought it was awesome the first few days because I was, like, right next to him, and he's fasting, and he's like, "Here you go. Here's my food." And I'm like, "All right. You know, this is cool." After probably 5 days, I was like, "Man, this is amazing. This guy's, like, he's not eating anything, not drinking anything." And if you all choose to fast, don't not drink water either. That's a terrible idea. Because about 7 days in, he started seizing in the middle of the night. And this is the first time in my life that I ever prayed for anybody else. and I felt a presence in there. And I never saw him again, but I know he was taken care of from there on out. And I kind of left that experience in jail when I got out, and I was still on 2 and 3 because I struggled with the God thing. I'm praying, I'm doing stuff, but I thought I had to have everything figured out to continue on with turning my will over to God as I misunderstood him. You know, I didn't. I wanted to argue with sponsors. I had to, you know, find a new sponsor, so I found a guy that talked about his higher power in meetings, and he was just trying to get me to turn it over to anything, and I would argue with him every day. Can you imagine, like, months and months and months, and people are coming in behind me getting better, and they're not complaining with me on the porch out there at Nava or Biscayne or Triangle. You know, they're not complaining with me anymore. They're like happy, joyous, and free. And I'm getting worse. And I remember calling him. I was at the MARTA train station, Lindbergh. I was riding my bicycle around the city, going to meetings, meeting after meeting after meeting. And I was complaining again. And he said, "Casey, when are you finally going to turn it over?" I cussed him out. I fired. That was, you know. But that weekend, I went on scholarship the Atlanta Men's Workshop and went up there and did a third step, like workshop meeting, and said this prayer that I've been fighting, you know, with a bunch of guys. And I remember they all like kind of gathered, asked me how I was feeling after. Like, man, I don't really feel anything. Like, I just feel like I just read something. I don't, you know, I wanted that white light, you know, experience. I didn't get it, but I came back to Atlanta, and I got a home group, started going to a book study, you know, started doing all this stuff that had been suggested the whole time, started working on my fourth step, and just really got the ball rolling. And if you would have asked me what I thought of that workshop when I got back, I would have been like, dude, this sucked, you know, it's like, it was terrible. But it was a huge moment in my sobriety. You know, I just came into a Triangle and they were on the blank page of the big book, and, you know, went all the way through. And I got a job it started as community service, but it turned into a job at a church. The guy that hates God and hates religion, and I didn't even like to go to church meetings. Started doing that, and was working with a bunch of guys in recovery, and we were all crazy, but we were all, you know, we would be crazy with each other and then go to a meeting after every day, and, you know, really, you know, just kept going. I guess with, you know, 4 and 5, you know, I had resentments. And, but I guess the big part of it for me was the fears. I remember writing like snakes and spiders on my fear inventory because I didn't know what to write. And, I'm not even really scared of those things that much. And I just didn't want to show up at the blank page. And, he started chiseling at me, you know, and I was afraid of failure. I was afraid of success. I was afraid of everything. I just couldn't see it. And, you know, once I finally got into, you know, like that fifth step and talked about all the things that, you know, the other harms, the stupid stuff that I did when I was drinking, and, how much I had carried that. I had like the top 10 highlight of my screw ups that played in my head every night before I went to sleep. You know, it's like, you know, you're a piece of shit. You know, you did this, you did that. And once I finally told that to another man, and he was like, okay, whatever, you know, let's move on. I felt a lot of freedom from that step. 6 and 7 was very, like, boom, boom, my first time through. It took me a while of going back and having to make a bunch of amends, 10-step amends, to go really get back in those steps. and they changed my life. Because I hate apologizing. I hate making amends. I hate going back to somebody time and time again for the same behavior. Admitting that I was wrong. One thing with that, driving through the neighborhood, there was, when I was talking about that with my buddy, we swore up and down that we never went down the street because there was so much damage caused. We were like, oh, that was somebody else. So we got interrogated by the detectives, and we were just like, maintained a lie. No, you know, we did not go up that street. We did not go up that street. He got sober before I did, but he didn't go make that amends because it would have affected me, the driver. So we went back and made that amends together, and that was probably one of the better amends that I can remember that we did together. I was the type of guy, also the type of guy that would either wake up with nothing, or I'd wake up with everybody else's stuff. I would steal from everybody. So I had to go back and make all these amends to employers for stealing. And I had this mentality when I came in. I was like, I've never been fired from a job. It's like, that was wrong. There's like three or four that you're fired for stealing. But I would tell people that I'd never been fired. So I don't think I was cash register honest until I went and made amends for stealing from cash registers. And saying, hey, I did it. And they're like, most everybody, the guy that I drove through his yard, all these people that I've stole from, they're like, no shit. That's why you got fired, and that's why, you know, we don't talk to you anymore, basically, you know. They're like, thank you for making amends, you know, 10 years later, basically. But we knew the whole time. One employer that I did, he didn't know that I stole from him. He was like, I stole a watch, and I was all, like, messed up on some pills, and I took it, and I felt so guilty when I found it in my pocket the next day. I never wore it, and I still had it. It was in a drawer, and I took it to him. He's like, I don't care about this watch. It was, like, not even an expensive watch. You know, it was like, he's like, but my son just got back from overseas in the military. He's struggling with what you're struggling with now. Why don't you call him and help him? And that was very, very powerful as well. And like I talked about with Step 10, I worked with a bunch of alcoholics, and there were a bunch of personalities flying around. And, you know, I would fly off the handle and cut somebody out and then have to come back in and make amends. And I just got so tired of doing the same thing. But when I came in, I was like, I'm a chill guy. I'm calm. And, so you're calm when you're drinking every day and smoking a bunch of pot, but when you're stuck with you, you're a lunatic. And I started to have to do really look at that stuff on how to handle situations. That was a big part of growth, was continuing to go back and make those amends when I didn't want to, when I was convinced that I was right. You know, I was calling my sponsor, and he's like, no, maybe it was a little bit justified, but you can't act like that. You know, go make amends anyway. A big part of staying sober for me was service. It's awesome that Kat asked me. We went to Biscayne Room. It was a bunch of young people that were young 30 years prior to us being there. And it was still listed as a young people's meeting. So we showed up and we were told to do a lot of stuff. And they had their sneaky little ways. They would say, oh, you're doing so good. I think you'd be awesome at this position. And I'm like, oh, man. They just didn't want to do it. But they knew it would help me stay sober, so I started doing all this service work at Biscayne. I was terrified of people, so they made me the greeter. After a greeting for a little while, I started doing the coffee. And I remember old James. I took so much pride in my coffee. I would make the most ridiculously strong coffee, and he would yell at me, and I would yell back at him, and we would just get into it over coffee at a meeting. And he was one of my buddies. I love that guy. And then they said, oh, I think you'll be a great GSR, and like, dude, I'm on a bicycle. Like, I can't go to Macon. And they're like, we'll take you, you know. And started doing stuff like that. And over the years, if I ever take a break from that, I feel like something in my program is missing. There's a huge void. And I can't put my finger on it. It's like, I don't know how many times I've gone to a meeting because I told somebody I was going to be there. And otherwise I would have just stayed home. Being a man of my word is very important to me today, because I wasn't for so many years. I was, you know, would talk about, oh, I can do all this stuff and blah, 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 I'll help you move tomorrow. And, you know, tomorrow comes and I can't do shit and I'm not helping you move. So that was a big, you know, service work is a huge part of my sobriety. Prayer, meditation has taken me so long to slow down with the meditation part. I'm a very go, 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 snooze, 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 run out the door guy. So that discipline of just taking those few minutes in the morning to stop. I don't know how many meetings I've been to at 8 o'clock. It's like, oh, man. This all makes sense. This end of the day. And it's like I've been ripping and roaring all day, and I finally find the solution at 8 o'clock. It's, you know, at least I'll stay sober, but it would have been nice to have done that when I woke up in the morning. And it's a huge part of my sobriety is just taking that minute before I start the car to pray and just take some quiet time. I think I was like 7 or 8 years sober, and my wife, she had been like praying for me to, you know, really get closer to God and do that, and it was very uncomfortable. But I started going to church with her and doing that kind of stuff, and you know, I had a bad habit of, just like I am in AA, oh, you need somebody to do that? Need somebody to do that? And we got two little kids running around at home, and she's like, dude, what are you doing? You can't sign up for a service commitment, you know, 7 nights a week when we have two little kids to take care of. So balance has been a huge part. I don't need 3 service commitments in AA and, you know, go on mission trips and do all this stuff when I need to be service at home. You know, that book in the part, that part in the book where it's, you know, if his own house is in order. So many times I ran out and the house was trashed and I'm going to help others. And it's like, I really needed to be at home. And, this is recorded. So she's going to hear this, but she'll be here next week, tell the other side, that was all true. And I met her 4th of July weekend. I got sober July 7th. I had to get through 4th of July weekend to get a 30-day chip. And she came and introduced herself to me, and I looked at my shoes and walked away. And we got together a year later and had like a all-AA wedding, you know, 5 years after that. The bartenders there were just like, what is going on at this wedding? Like, all the old people are trashed. And all the young people that are normally trashed are, like, sober. Like, what is going on here? We had a keg at our wedding to appease the older folks. I've been able to do stuff like that, you know, do all these concerts. And, you know, I'm going to New York City for a bachelor party this weekend and do these things sober. And I never thought I would be able to enjoy myself sober. And it's amazing. I have extra cash to do a bunch of stuff rather than just sit at home and drink. And it's been a total blessing. I've become a father in sobriety, and that comes with its challenges, trying to be a, cause I can be crazy. Just cause I'm not drinking, I can still be crazy. I am not an exception to the hot tempered redhead. When I get mad, my wife and I both talk about responding rather than reacting. We can just go right back at our kids when they're, you know, being unruly rather than just hearing them out. And we still, you know, I've got to be pushovers either way, but we're not really solving anything if we're just yelling at them, you know, spanking them and like, get in line. So that's been it's been awesome. And there's so many people in AA that I've talked to about this stuff and had people ahead of me that have, you know, I've always gravitated towards older sponsors because they seem so, they don't react to all the crazy stuff that I think is so big. It's just like, it's just another day to them. It's no big deal. So that has been a blessing and, you know, and where is God in this situation? And that it's not forever and to cherish these moments and be present, with my family. It's hard to be part of. Sometimes I was always the guy that would just wander off drunk, you know, and it's hard, like even, you know, going anywhere, I'll just start, you know, walking, do, and I'll look back and where's everybody, you know, trying to be a part of with my family. But it's been a blessing to be there and continually suit up and show up. I'm still involved with service today. I do corrections work now. Still sponsor a bunch of guys and help out when I can. I don't go do like what I used to. When me and Kat were getting sober, we were, you know, going to treatment centers and sponsoring half the playhouse, and it's just like I gotta have time for my family today. But I love that we had the opportunity to do that. I remember when I first started sponsoring guys, I was still on my bicycle, and I'm like, who's going to want me to be their sponsor? And I was going to Dunwoody men's meeting out there, and he goes, probably nobody here. You should try Peachford. And I started going to these Peachford meetings and working with guys, and I really didn't feel like I had anything to offer. But I was doing these book studies, you know, book study after another, boom, boom, boom. And I had all these notes in my book, and I started going through them with other guys, and the book just came alive to me. All this, you know, experience had been passed on. I started having experience of my own to pass on, and it was amazing. You know, I did learn that, you know, it's great to give a newcomer your book, but don't give them the book that you put all of your notes in and highlight it. Might never see him again, but it's just a book. I can't believe that I'm still here today. It amazes me. I don't know how many times I've gone to a treatment meeting or a detox meeting, and I'll hear this guy with a fire share, and he's got it all figured out. And man, where did he? What home group is he from? And I look down, and he's got no shoelaces, and you know, or these guys that have been around, and I think they're doing awesome, and then I find out that they're dead. I'm so grateful that God hasn't seen it necessary for me to go and do anything like that. I'm coming off of a very very rough beginning of the year. You know, there was funeral after funeral after funeral. I felt hopeless, but I had, you know, I had those commitments in. And I just kept going, kept showing up. Things got better. Things got better. Had people that my wife's dad died, and women from my home group just came and bombarded our house and helped her through it, helped us through it. It was amazing. I still need help just like I did, you know, when I came in. And I'm glad that, I'm not afraid to ask for it when I do, and I'm, you know, there for other people as well. I think that's all I got for tonight. I'm really glad to be here. Very cool to be back at downtown. I am. It was such a transition to move up to Buford. Everything like shuts down at this time, and we were like, "What is going on up here?" Because we were used to like going to 3 a.m. taco joints and doing all this stuff and living the nightlife, and now we like shut down at 9 o'clock. So I think I'm going to shut down. Thank you.
First I slipped, Where the promises are.